Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, hey, boys.
Bury me in the age.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hubley.
The fellas are out. Luke Morrow and Brandon Scott in for them instead today. As we look ahead to the Astros tonight, but is Paul Skenes not even the pitcher worth watching in tonight's matchup between the Astros and the Pirates? We'll get to that. You can always text the show 713-572-4610. I asked you, what's the worst jersey purchase you've ever made? And we've gotten all sorts of texts to roll in. 832 said a Tom Savage jersey.
Ooh.
I don't know anybody bought one of those.
Hey, you know what? I didn't buy.
That's worse than Mills.
That is miles worse than Mills.
I was putting my hope in General Mills. Nobody ever believed in Savage. Come on.
Hey, look, I appreciate whoever this was just, you know, owning it and you know, kind of fessing up to it. But you should be ashamed of yourself, dog.
Yeah.
What were you ever thinking? And look, I'm kind of just in a moment of transparency. I wasn't enough in the Tom Savage camp to buy a jersey, but I did have hope at one point.
Ugh.
I did have hope. Well, I'll tell y'all this story. I did many, many moons ago, so back in the Tom Savage days, I did a demo up here with Nick Wright. I kid you not. There's a tape with me and Nick Wright, formerly of Sports Radio 610 fame, now Fox Sports 1. And we did a demo that had never saw the light of day, that no one's ever heard but he and I, where I had, you know, the Tom Savage take that I want to see more. I want to see them play Tom Savage. And I can't tell you, man, I don't even know why I just admitted it out loud right now, but I can't tell you how glad I am that take in that segment never saw the light of day.
Well, I mean, to be fair, at one point it was like between him or Brock Osweiler. So
that's
it's
exactly
like,
what I was gonna say.
Pick your poison.
Yeah, pick your poison.
Yeah, I guess. Not either of our finest moments. I'll be right there with you, Texter. I didn't get the jersey, but I did have the bad take, the freezing cold take, if you will.
713 says it was gifted. They didn't buy it, but a Brock Osweiler jersey. They wore it to an ugly Christmas sweater party and then donated it after.
Nice.
205 says some of my poor jersey purchases include Ryan Leaf. That was bad.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know they made these jerseys, but Cade McNown.
Wait, really?
Yeah, I didn't even know anyone could ever buy one of his jerseys.
Yeah, that feels like one you would have had to get personalized. Like
yeah.
All the Cade McNown jerseys were the Cade McNown relatives who went to the
right.
team shop or the NFL shop and got them customized. But like that feels like the only way to get one.
832 said, I bought an Oilers jersey a few weeks before finding out they were leaving.
Wait, what? Oh, okay. I thought he was going to say a few weeks before they left. Did you not read the news?
Yeah, that's tough. 409 says, not a jersey, but I did name my dog Watson.
Ooh.
Before everything went down.
Fair.
Just say you're a big Sherlock fan.
I'll go to you on this team, Mill. What's the rules on changing your dog's name? Is that not allowed?
Oof. I mean, it's... You really don't want to after, like, they reach a certain age because you trained them and that's
and
what they're responding
to.
And yeah.
Yeah. Yikes.
Yeah, I'd just go with a big Sherlock fan after that.
Yeah. 713 said Case Keenum. And then
that's rude.
Hey, the whole wearing the Brock Osweiler jersey to an ugly sweater party, that is really funny. That's a nice touch.
It's a great use of it.
Yeah, very clever.
We got multiple Osweilers. And then the last one I'll bring up, Steve Slayton, during the last week of his rookie year from the 8-3-2. Worst jersey that person ever bought.
I think they're being hard on themselves, man. Steve Slayton was good at one point, and you could justify that purchase, especially that one year, that one magical Steve Slayton year. And I would say that is you being a true day one. I know that wasn't like the original team, but like that's a deep cut if there ever was one. Like you have to be a tried and true Texans fan / Houstonian or whatever you want to call yourself to even know that that was ever a jersey worth purchasing.
I lied. I have to get to this last one that just came in from the 346 because this can't be true. What a ridiculous lineup. Aaron Hernandez, Brett Favre, Mike Vick, Johnny Football.
Yeah, that's BS.
And then said, get yourself some of that.
And also, if it was true, you have some weak-ass fandom.
all three of those? Or all four of those?
It's got to be BS.
No way they did that.
And like I said, if they did, like, you're not a fan. Like, what are you doing?
Or if that's true, start buying like Mariners jerseys, Colts jerseys,
Pirates jerseys.
Yeah, that's right. For this week,
non-Clemente. Yeah, Pirates jerseys. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty rough. That's pretty rough. Either that, or you have a, you know, thing for self-torture.
Yeah, that's right. Don't mind walking around looking like an idiot either in public wearing some of those after the fact. 281 says John Wall, biggest disappointment. Which actually might circle back to a John Wall thought later on, actually, when talking about the NBA.
That's a tease.
That's right. Main Man Ocho said, I don't usually watch the Astros when Lance McCullers pitches because he gives me ulcers. So tonight I'll be watching for Paul Skeens, which takes me to the tease I set up for this segment, which was Paul Skeens is not the pitcher to watch for tonight's game as the Astros take on the Pirates in Pittsburgh. 5:40 first pitch here Central Time. And, Brandon, you mentioned earlier the Astros need Lance McCullers now. They need him more than ever before. And it seems like, look, the Pirates don't have a very good lineup, but this is a big spot tonight when you go up against Paul Skeens on the road.
Yeah, I think if you're just an objective observer or, you know, just a general baseball fan, then obviously Paul Skeens is the appointment viewing in this game, okay? So, like, I don't want to take away from that. But if you're an Astros fan, and that's who we're talking to, you know, specific to Houston, Lance McCullers and how this thing goes just matters more than it ever has. And
makes us all nervous.
And I've gotten to a point to where I'm beyond just, hey, he's more important now than he was, let's say, in the beginning of the year or when he made his first start, as opposed to what is this going to be, his sixth turn in the rotation. It's even changed from there. And it's for obvious reasons. Of course, we've been following the news. We understand that the Astros have a Tommy John problem. So that's part of it. That's a big part. That's probably the main part of it. But I would also point out that in the Lance McCullers heyday, when Lance McCullers was pitching and it was the Lance McCullers that we had grown to know, it was at a time when they had others in their rotation that you felt good about, you know, that you felt real confident in. It was okay for you to get to the Lance McCullers start after Verlander or even in the cold days and, you know, Fromber's earliest days and, you know, Zach Greinke. Like, they've had guys in that rotation where Lance wasn't the top of the rotation guy, but his third, fourth, and fifth starters went.
I liked your voice.
Hey, that was a hell of a route to go. That was a hell of an option to go with. Now, and I know he's not necessarily like the third guy in the rotation, like the order of the rotation, but he's the third guy that you would have to feel confident in because the guys after that or just not guys at all. No disrespect to them, but the Colton Gordons and the Ryan Gustos of the world just aren't there yet. They can't be. And so after Framber Valdez and after Hunter Brown, it starts to get really, really murky unless Lance McCullers can be some version of the old Lance McCullers, or even if you don't want to compare it to the old Lance McCullers, just be a starting pitcher. Be an actual starting pitcher and not make it feel like a bullpen game. And to his credit, he's had some outings as of late that give you confidence that that could be the case. He's had some shaky ones too. But I just think that now it's more important for two reasons. Because of the injuries that we already know about, but also even without those injuries, the depth of the rotation, or the quality of the rotation, maybe I should say, is not the same as it used to be. And it just heightens the importance of Lance McCullers being at the very least serviceable and decent. So, again, this is a, and you mentioned it, this is an example of them going up against a lineup that's not all the way strong. You would like to see Lance McCullers be on the right side of history here.
Coming off that performance with 12 strikeouts against the A's, who also don't have one of the most premier lineups. And McCullers has gotten better each of his last three outings, certainly in strikeouts. And he's ran through the AL West, the Rangers, Mariners, A's, now takes on the Pirates in this interleague game. And Pirates have the third worst lineup statistically in baseball, so that helps. I was saying all offseason that whatever you get from McCullers this year is gravy. And I wasn't even expecting a ton from him. Honestly, I was shocked that he returned to the mound as quickly this season as he did. But like you said, now we're to the point where, I mean, it's no longer gravy. He's become an important part. You need good starts from him now. He's their number three starter for all intents and purposes right now. And I say all that to set up my question, I suppose, of like, where are you on Lance? Do you think he can be someone that, coming off that 12 strikeout performance, he can be counted on, or are we still kind of figuring our way through this thing?
The non-answer is he has to be, right? That's the cop-out, is like, whether you think he is or not, he kind of just has to be. I mean, think about it like this, Luke. He went from sixth to third in a matter of just like that, right? Like in a finger snap, he went from luxury Lance, as the guys on this show like to call it, right? T. Mill, that's what we've called here on the drive. We've been calling him luxury Lance.
Designated a while back.
And now it ain't no luxury no more, right? Like, it's not a matter of, well, or they're going to go to a six-man rotation when they got 17 games in 17 days, or now that they got six starters, are they going to do that to, you know, give their guys some reprieve, if you will? It ain't that. You know, like, you need him, again, now more than ever, and certainly now more than you did at the start of the season, to go from sixth to third so quickly, and we're barely into June. And it was this case like in late, so we get to late May, and now that's the case. He goes from sixth to third just that quickly. Now, to your question, where am I at? I'm a Lance McCullers guy, you know, and unapologetically, you know, I am biased toward the guys that contributed to the World Series campaigns. And so everybody that was a significant part of a World Series for the Astros is an Astros legend to me. So you can't make me hate Lance McCullers. I know he ain't pitched in 3 years or whatever it was, you know, prior to these six starts, and I know luxury Lance, and we made a joke of all of the Lance McCullers updates that we would get throughout the last couple of years when he wasn't pitching, and there is a level of frustration, I think, for everybody, even for me as somebody who is a staunch Lance defender. It's frustrating, but it's hard for me not to have confidence in a guy that I've seen operate in the way that I've seen him operate in the past, and even not just the, I wouldn't even just say the past, but the more, I would say, recent future in him constantly evolving as a pitcher, right? He's constantly having to reinvent himself and, like, not just be a thrower, but a pitcher. And I think he's done a really decent job of doing that. Like, to his credit, you know, the injuries aside, like, that's a tough part. But when he's out there, I feel like he's giving you quality for the most part. So, like, his last start, doesn't get the win, but gives you a quality start. Had a couple of hiccups there, but for the most part, I mean, he had the 12 strikeouts. He had like five ground balls or something like that. It was just, it was quality, not just in terms of what the definition of what a quality start is, but the eye test of watching him out there. I felt pretty good about him in that outing. And I know we're just using that as one antidote, but if I take that and try to carry it over into this start, and then, you know, depending on what happens tonight, you know, or today and to the next start, then, yeah, like, I think he is at least building confidence in myself and others.
713's with me. They say, I agree. Everyone knows who Skeens is. We need to find out about Lance for sure.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, that was kind of my thought. This is a big look, I think it's interesting that as we go along, I keep saying this every time we talk about the next Lance McCullers start, but I keep saying, like, this is the biggest one, and now this is the biggest start. And it kind of started that way where it went like the White Sox were a minor league team, and then get the Reds who are better, and obviously that was a disaster. Then you get the Rangers on the road, and that seemed like a big spot, but then you pitch against Seattle, who's in first place, you know, and then you try to build off of that against another divisional team in the A's, and now you go on the road for the first time in a couple turns, and you take on Paul Skeens, which leads me to this other comment from the texter that says, from the 337, the biggest fear is that it went from luxury to where we didn't have to depend on him to now we need him. I know he feels it. I hope he doesn't overdo it just to be that guy, says 337. That was actually my thought for tonight, where this is maybe like a novice take because the pitchers don't necessarily face each other. You're facing the batters. But McCullers is on his way back. He's coming off the 12 strikeout game. And then you see Paul Skeens on the other side. And McCullers used to be, maybe not to the Skeens level, but he's used to being like one of the guys for the Astros.
Yeah, got paid, you know, got a contract. Yeah, for sure.
So when you see, like, oh, I'm pitching against Skeens tonight. And for any competitor, like, you ramp it up another level. Again, this might be an amateur take, but it's just a small little concern tonight that maybe he does try to overdo it or just overthrows because he's trying to match Skeens on the other side, like pitch for pitch.
Yeah, I think it's a fair concern, and to just kind of hope for the Astros' sake that Lance McCullers doesn't get in his own head.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't tell you, and you know, I know Lance a little bit as well as I do. I can't tell you one way or another if he's going to be in his head or not. Only he really knows how he's going to internalize this. And when I say internalize this, I'm talking about both sides of both ends of the ledger here in terms of the Paul Skeens element of it. That's the other guy that's on the other side. But then also, they need me. To the Texas point, I'm not luxury Lance anymore. I am a necessary part of this rotation. Does he take that in stride and just, you know, just handle it like more, for lack of a better term, like a professional? Or does he get in his own head and try to do too much? That's the part that I don't know if I'm fearful of, but I'm hoping against it. I'm hoping that that's not the case for Lance McCullers, that he's got the experience and the wherewithal to go out there and just do his thing. And again, your most recent example was successful. You didn't get the win, but your team got the win and you pitched well. Lean into that. Lean into that sort of game plan and mantra of, hey, I'm just going to go out there and do my thing and run my own race, so to speak.
I think that's a better way to put it. I'm not overly fearful, but yeah, just hoping he avoids that. Before we go to break here quickly, I just looked it up. The Astros' run total tonight against Skeens, 2.5 runs. Do you think the Astros can get 3 runs on the board against Paul Skeens?
I mean, that's about what they're good for. That's a hell of a line. I mean, Paul Skeens or otherwise, that's what they're about good for. Win or lose, by the way.
Given the large bet I have on over 3.5 runs for the Astros tonight.
Ooh, large bet, huh?
Way more than I typically put down on a bet like that.
Man, you know what? I usually like to team up with you on some of these bets, man. But I'm gonna stay away from that one, T-Mill.
We're breaking through back into the green. I can feel it down in my plums.
I'm rooting for you. I'm rooting for you in your pockets, man.
Thanks, man. Me too.
We'll see how they do. Yeah. I always love watching a pitcher I love watching Hunter Brown pitch every 5 days. So I'm looking forward, even if it's maybe we'll see at the expense of the Astros hitters tonight. We'll see how it goes. But I do have to admit, I am looking forward to sitting down watching Paul Skeens pitch. When a pitcher is on their game, it's very fun to watch.
Yeah, and he's the future.
Right.
I mean, you could even argue he's the present, but
yeah.
But he is certainly the future. And so if you're a casual baseball fan even, then this will be worth watching for sure.
Absolutely. Hey, it's Tuesday, which means when we come back, it's time for Real or Fake. I'm told we run through Kim Kardashian's body parts for this segment. We'll do it next. It's The Drive.
You are fake news.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Luke Morrow and Brandon Scott in for the guys of The Drive today. And time in just a moment to play Real or Fake, as we do it this time every Tuesday around here. You can always text the show 713-572-4610. I did just have to shout out one more text that came in earlier for the worst jerseys ever bought. Someone apparently bought a Donyell Marshall jersey. Donyell was my guy. I grew up in Connecticut, a fan of UConn, and he was one of the first NBA players from UConn. I don't know why you'd ever buy a Donyell Marshall jersey, though, but props to you. I always liked Donyell.
Yeah, we've gotten into changing the question a little bit from worst to just like deepest cut.
Because
yeah, right. Donyell Marshall wasn't a bad player. That just isn't, to your point, that isn't somebody who, you know, I can't wait to get to the store and buy my Donyell Marshall jersey. Right. I don't know what led you to say that ever.
I don't even know who that guy is.
There you go. Like, and so out. Tyler doesn't even know Donyell Marshall.
And I'm not ashamed to admit that.
It's okay.
Unbelievable.
It's okay.
All right, let's play a little Real or Fake. I have a series of topics in the sports world. Ask you guys if you think it's real or fake. Are we buying it or selling, I guess, similar idea, right? Real or fake?
Yeah, ultimately.
Jeremy Pena. I saw this the other day. Aaron Judge has the highest WAR in Major League Baseball. Jeremy Pena is number two. Not for shortstops. Not for shortstops in the AL. But of all players in Major League Baseball, statistically, just that one stat, Jeremy Pena is the second most valuable player right now in the league with the way he's playing.
It feels huge.
It does. I don't even know how to phrase this question, though. Are you buying? Is this real? All right, because of the name of the segment, is what Jeremy Pena is, what he's doing so far this year, is that the real Jeremy Pena?
Now, I don't want to take us down a nerd path, but I'm going to. Is this B war or F war? Because, like, I'm a Fangraphs guy, not a Baseball Reference guy. Like, I use Baseball Reference, just not for WAR.
Uh-huh.
And so he's not number two by Fangraphs. And so just by nature of which nerd stats I prefer, I'm going to say I'm going to call it fake.
You are fake news.
So, but I feel like it's a slight to Jeremy Pena because he's been excellent, mm-hmm. you know, and I don't feel a need to take away from that in any context, not even in this segment, not even for this game that we're playing. So I reluctantly say that it's fake, but credit to Jeremy Pena for even making this a conversation.
Tyler, since you're the Astros guy around here, Jeremy Pena, what we've seen from him so far this year, real or fake?
I'm going real. Ooh. I'm going real, man. I mean, we all talked about it before opening day. We needed it. We wanted it. We wanted to see a more consistent, well-rounded 162-game season from Jeremy Pena, and he's doing it. And, I mean, you don't just wake up and win. It was a while back now. You don't just wake up and win, though, an American League, his AL MVP in the CS, and then a World Series MVP. Like, you got talent. We've always seen it. It was just a matter of putting it together. So I'm going absolutely real. The shortstop, Jeremy Pena, and that bat is here to stay.
But to the point, though, the point that Tyler's making, I do think this is important that ever since he won those awards that Tyler mentioned, we have been waiting on him to tap back into that.
100%.
Like, we have been waiting on the Jeremy Pena that teased us that year, that rookie year. The first year of replacing Carlos Correa. I can even remember we had local news stations, Luke, at the time that were running. They had like running graphics of Correa-Pena comparisons for what Correa was doing in Minnesota and what Pena was doing here. And early on, Pena was outperforming Correa. Now, that soon dissipated, of course. But then by the time you get to the end of it, of course, the Twins aren't a factor anymore at the end of it. And the Astros are. And Pena ended up getting the last laugh. But then ever since then, it has not quite felt the same, of course, until now. So it's a good feeling to at least be in this space again, to my point earlier. Like, even making it a conversation piece is a credit to Jeremy Pena for sure.
I think these next few weeks are big. He's a career 230 hitter in the summer months. We've seen him get off to some of these good starts, and whether it's the dog days or whatever, start to fade a little bit. Last year was batting about 329 at the end of May and then hit 240 the rest of the way. So I'm curious to see if he can continue this, get over that hump these next few weeks. And it's like, okay, maybe this is just the guy now.
Yeah, and I wonder, too, how much just being a leadoff guy, you know, it feels like it's changed something in him. I don't have an exact science on it or explanation for it, but all I can deal with right now is the results, and they're pretty damn good.
Next one, real or fake? Stephon Diggs, we know the issues he's getting into with the Patriots. But when it comes to his time in the Texans, the statement that the Texans culture is what kept Stephon Diggs on his best behavior last year, would that be real or fake?
I gotta go fake because...
You are fake news.
And it's not a knock on the Texans culture. It's more of a statement about Stephon Diggs just being more of a singular personality. And I'm not calling him selfish. I'm just saying that I don't think that any team's culture, good or bad, is strong enough to knock Stephon Diggs off his post, if you will. What I'm saying is Stephon Diggs is just going to be Stephon Diggs no matter what. I think if anything kept him on his best behavior was the fact that it was just a redemption year. It was a prove-it type year. They restructured the deal famously or infamously, depending on how you looked at it. They restructured the deal for it to be a one-year deal. And so he was in a de facto contract and prove it season. And I think that more so than the circumstance, more than the culture, is what kept him on his quote unquote best behavior, if you will. So I'm gonna call that fake as well.
Yeah, I'm with you on fake. I think it's more about like these contract years. He started acting out once he got the contract in Minnesota, started acting out once he got the contract in Buffalo. Here in Houston, he was essentially on a one-year deal, going to be a free agent, goes to New England, gets the contract, and now he's seen partying with Cardi B and all that other stuff. Hey, so.
Champ Slice on our YouTube chat says that, from Champ Slice, they said him and Cardi was working on the tush push. I don't know if y'all seen some of those videos of them out there in these streets, but that's a funny comment. Credit to you, Champ Slice. Very, very well done.
That's good. He's got some good ones. 346 said, "You see his girl? I'd be acting stupid too."
Yes. So if I had access to Cardi B, I cannot say that I'd be the exact mature individual that presents to you today.
Yeah,
I don't think I would.
Let's get a third one in here, real or fake, before we go. The Detroit Lions, they lost their offensive coordinator this offseason, defensive coordinator this offseason. Now their center, Frank Ragnow, surprisingly retired this week as well. So you're down your center. The Lions, just simply 2025 Lions after the last two seasons they've had. Do you think the 2025 Lions as a Super Bowl contender, are they real or are they fake?
I think that they're real as a Super Bowl contender. There's still enough talent there to give them enough of the benefit of the doubt. But I don't want to, in saying that it's real, minimize the losses that you just mentioned, because I think those are also real.
Bite the kneecap off.
A big part of why the Lions have been what they have been over the last couple of years is the strength of that offensive line. And I think that that's a huge loss for them. And, of course, the coordinators as well. Like, as much of credit I think that Dan Campbell deserves as a head coach for the job that he's done, I think a big part of the job that he's done is that he did an excellent job, and I mean an excellent job, of hiring coordinators and Ben Johnson and our very own Aaron Glenn, Houston's own. Not having those guys anymore, I think, is going to matter. Now, he could replace those guys with just as good guys. I don't know what it's going to look like under their new regime for the coordinators respectively, but you got to figure that that's going to factor in a little bit, that they're going to have to make some kind of adjustment not having those guys around anymore.
Yeah, I'm going to say fake about the 2025 Lions. I think it was more about Ben Johnson than it was Dan Campbell. Delivered this take, I don't know if it was on these airwaves or where I was previously, but I think Dan Campbell is one of the bigger frauds in the NFL. Great culture guy, but not like some sort of X's and O's. I think they win in spite of him. I think he makes terrible decisions week in and week out. We've seen that in some of the biggest games. And now you take away Ben Johnson and what he was doing with that offense that really elevated Jared Goff. I think the Lions take a big step back this year.
But you don't think he's good at hiring? Because, like, I just look around at his staff, the coordinators that stand out particularly, but sometimes I think it's there's a strength in knowing what you don't know or being able to compensate for your weaknesses. Because I don't disagree with your points overall about Dan Campbell, but the credit that I'm giving him is being able to identify and compensate for his blind spots.
Yeah, I guess I'll give him some credit there. I give him credit for one aspect that you mentioned there of admitting to what he doesn't know. Like, I like that he's hands-off. He let Ben Johnson just run the offense. Ben Johnson did a great job, seemingly. Dan Campbell wasn't overly involved. But he originally, he got rid of his offensive coordinator. I think it was it Anthony Lynn, or was that right before him? Anyways, he got rid of his offensive coordinator year one. Ben Johnson was already there, who was a holdover on the staff.
Right.
He elevated it. I almost feel like he lucked into Ben
Johnson.
That's a
good, I didn't think about that. That's a good point.
So we'll see now, having to replace these guys. Yeah, your theory or your point will be put to the test this year. Now that he actually had to replace his coordinators, did he make the right hires this time? We'll see. I don't like Johnny Morton, the new offensive coordinator, but we'll see what happens with the Lions. Hey, when we come back, the latest on the Rockets' potential offseason plans. We got B. Scott here. We got to get to a little Rockets. We'll do it next. It's The Drive.
Take your other kneecap.
I don't see no bitches nowhere around here.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Luke Morrow and Brandon Scott in for the guys here on The Drive today. And we'll talk a little Rockets. Has the offseason plan changed at all? You can always text the show 713-572-4610. I know this is something that has been talked about a lot on these airwaves, various shows, various times in the last couple of weeks, but I haven't had the chance to talk to you, Brandon, about this, so, and always different audience, so I figure we talk about, you know, the NBA Finals are set now with the Thunder and the Pacers. And I think a lot of people, myself included, have pointed to the NBA playoffs, specifically the last four teams, and looked at that and said, you know what, the Rockets, they don't necessarily need to go get that big name, because you look at what the Thunder and the Timberwolves did just building up their teams within. Jalen Brunson and Tyrese Halliburton were the additions for the Knicks and the Pacers, not necessarily on the level of a Kevin Durant or a Giannis or whatever big names people have been throwing out this offseason for the Rockets. And I think some people have looked at how the playoffs have played out, plus we're in like the greatest era for parity in the league with seven straight different champs, saying, you know, maybe we could just keep it status quo, give these guys another year. So just to start this segment before I dive in a little more, just where are you with the Rockets and what the plan should be this offseason? Are you in the camp of we need like a Kevin Durant, we need a Giannis, we need some sort of MVP candidate, or are you more in the camp of we got the pieces here, just need a little more time?
Well, I do love, just from a Rockets standpoint, that the options are there. And I don't think, and this is not a cop-out, this is just my honest take on it, I don't think that they've got bad options. I think running it back is a solid option. But to answer your question, I am in the pro go get one of these guys camp. Like, definitively, no wiggle room here. Like, if they run it back, I got some provisions, if you will. Like, I got some stipulations on what I want that to look like. If they do run it back, I think they got to change some guys' roles. I think they got to emphasize some guys more and de-emphasize some other guys a little bit. And I think that should be a priority if they do run it back. But again, to the point and to the question, what do I want them to do? What do I think they should do? If Giannis is an option, like, I just got a hard time being the sort of basketball guy that I am, following the NBA in the way that I do and understanding who and what Giannis is. I got a hard time accepting the idea that Giannis is available and you've got more to offer, just as much to offer as anybody, and in some cases maybe even more to offer than anybody, and you don't feel like you should be in that position to go get Giannis. So what I'm saying is, I don't think that there is a player on this team, or even really a reasonable combination of players on this team, that that should preclude you from being as active in the Giannis pursuit as anybody. So if I were to rank them, I would say the Kevin Durant thing interests me because I feel like you can get him without breaking up without selling the farm, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So like, a lot of people don't want to disrupt the core, don't want to ruin a good thing, don't want to fix something that isn't broken by going out and getting a dude that's even older than I am to add to the team. Okay, well, I can understand that. But the key part with this is that because he's so damn old and injured and all of these other things, and the whole world knows that he's leaving Phoenix, that he's not going to be there next year, to me, that should constitute some sort of discount. That should mean that the cost of going to go get a Kevin Durant doesn't cost you your core. Maybe it costs you some role player, a role player or two, and a draft pick or two, but that to me doesn't debilitate you of your core, doesn't, you know, rid you of your core, and you add the thing that you're missing, which is that perimeter score, that shot creation, that guy that you can give the ball to when it's nut cutting time. So I think that that's the easiest and simplest route, is just, hey, go get Kevin Durant, don't disrupt everything to do it, and if you do, end the conversation right then and there and move on. But if you're really trying to level up, if you're trying to be bold about it, go ahead and go get Giannis and accept the fact that you don't have a guy on this team that's anything like that. And if we're being honest about it, to the point that you made earlier about the final four, if you will, the final four teams that were left in the semifinals, or in the conference finals, they don't even have a guy like the best players on those teams. Like, to me, there is not a Jalen Brunson on this team.
Right.
There is not a Tyrese Halliburton on this team. There is not an Anthony Edwards, and certainly to me not an MVP, a Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Agreed.
So, you know, Giannis would be one of those guys, right? So to me, I still think, you know, it's the end of the super team era, but the NBA and basketball just in general is still driven by stars, still driven by individual excellence and being able to mesh it all together in a team format. So I think that they should be firmly planted in the Giannis and Kevin Durant sweepstakes.
Then I'm sure you'll like this report, which you probably already saw from Kelly Eco earlier, that he said, since the conclusion of the season, Houston has fielded several calls from Phoenix, who have since gradually lowered their asking price for Kevin Durant. Now, he did go on in his piece for The Athletic to say, this is not to say the Rockets and Suns are in communication, but Phoenix is aggressive in their pursuit of trading Kevin Durant and also B, regaining full control of their draft capital, starting with the number 10 pick in next month's draft, team sources said. The Rockets have fielded several calls from the Suns, who have gradually lowered their price, so on and so forth. You can find the full piece at The Athletic, but you know, does that excite you to hear the Suns are aggressively trying to foist Durant onto evidently the Rockets?
I would send that number 10 pick on a rocket ship. You know what I mean? Like I'll drive the number 10 pick, who has not been picked yet, by the way. I'll drive him to Phoenix myself.
Ain't nobody in here acting like no bitch.
Like I'm so serious, man. Like that is a no-brainer to me. Now, the whole idea that they want to recapture their future, so to speak, and get their draft capital back, that's not happening. Sorry, like that's the bridge too far. And obviously, you know, if that's some kind of stipulation, then you move on, because you have their future, and you can dangle the Suns' future, which is not a good one right now. You can dangle that in front of the Milwaukee Bucks and say, hey, how would you like to play off and benefit off of the Suns' calamity, right? Like, how would you like to
be quicker than that?
Let's do that. You know, so to me, the Suns don't have a player that's worth giving up the Rockets giving up the Suns' future for, if that makes sense, right? So I wouldn't do it for Kevin Durant, and I wouldn't even do it for the most recent version of Devin Booker that we've seen. And I like Devin Booker, but I wouldn't give up all of those picks to get him. So to me, it's either, hey, I'll give you this 10th pick, you get Jabari Smith, or you know, one of these other guys that's not necessarily that's not Alperen Şengün, Jalen Green, or Amen Thompson, but that's as good as it's going to get for you.
There have been conflicting reports I've seen about Devin Booker, but the main thing being that the Rockets have soured on him based off of, I guess, just the last year, or this season that's wrapping up now at the NBA Finals, are not as interested in him now as maybe they once were. In regards to Giannis, the news there is that suddenly, you know, to quote Seinfeld, suddenly a new contender has emerged, and that's the Toronto Raptors, evidently. Now, the odds, this is all just going off of betting odds, really, and the reporting from sources. But based off of the odds, the Rockets are still behind, or I should say the Raptors are still behind the Rockets in the odds. Giannis is still favored in Vegas to stay in Milwaukee at minus 140, and then you have the Spurs, followed by the Rockets, would be the third favorite if you include the Bucks. The Rockets are at plus 450. Now the Raptors are at plus 1,000. And I've heard this idea that if you're Giannis, I mean, you know, the East is almost like the JV compared to the West, which is the varsity. Why not stay in the Eastern Conference if you're Giannis, if you can find that fit? I know that's why some people have floated out even this ridiculous idea of going to the Brooklyn Nets, because it's New York City and it's the Eastern Conference, even though they have nothing else right now. But, you know, those could be appealing things for Giannis. Now the Raptors in that Eastern Conference emerge. And there's always been this other thought, too, in NBA circles of, like, these international guys are different than the guys that grow up in this country that might be more ring-chasing, and the international guys are a little more loyal, and they stick to their teams, and they don't want to leave. The Bucks are still the favorites to keep Giannis. Do you think he even moves? And if he does, do you think it's the Spurs, the Rockets?
Yeah, I think they're just specific to Giannis and not even necessarily the international guys, which there probably is something to that. I do sense that Giannis is more inclined to stay and more inclined to ride it out. Now, I would have some serious questions about that decision making, you know, like if you just kind of see the writing on the wall. To me, to want to stay is not seeing the writing on the wall. It's to not understand the gravity of the situation. So, like, I would question that. I would also question, y'all, is this hypocritical of me that as much as I respect Giannis and agree with the point that would be made on the surface of, hey, the East is easier to get through than the West, that I lose a little bit of respect for the idea of running away from the grind? Mm-hmm. Like, you're Giannis. I could see maybe if he was even a lesser talent, like a top 15 to 20 player instead of a top 5, which he is, you're Giannis. So wherever you go, that's the side that the ledger moves toward. That team has the momentum, for lack of a better term, than, let's say, just the idea of a conference being stronger. Like, no, the West just got even stronger because Giannis is in it if he goes there.
Right.
The East, you know, remains, I guess, whatever it was because Giannis remains there. Like, you are a significant enough talent and player to influence what a conference looks like, to me. So I would suspect him to view himself the way I view him.
I'm with you. When I saw that news, honestly, yeah, it turned me off a little bit. Like, you know what? I want him less now. I want you to come compete in the toughest.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it.
Have that confidence. Don't take the easy way out. Real quick, because we have to hit a break. The Athletic also reported that if the Rockets cannot re-sign Steven Adams, they would target Brook Lopez. Would you welcome Brook Lopez onto this team?
Yes. Yes, because I think he provides, you know, obviously provides size for you. And you need that with Steven Adams being out. Now, he's not the brute force that Steven Adams would be, but also the shooting element, right? Anybody that can shoot the ball, I would welcome on this team because they don't have enough guys that can just simply do that.
We'll see what happens as the offseason unfolds. The NBA Finals get underway this week between the Thunder and the Pacers. Hey, coming up, it's the time for Dirty's Daily, as we do here on the Drive, 4 p.m. every day. The fellas might not be here, but we'll hold it down anyways. We'll do it next. It's the Drive.
All right, thanks, Tyler. Let's roll.